Hello, neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 26 of season 3. The show is brought to you by Kitchen Table Communications and the Voice of Bun Bay Radio Network, and we are exuberant that season 3 is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Here's a question for you. If large numbers of us consumers want the taste and health benefits of wild foods, how can farmers replicate the growing conditions that such wild species require on a large scale? Take wild blueberries for an example. In a natural forest, fire is a way to regenerate, to remove, to cleanse, to prompt new growth, including new and more productive blueberry patches. But in today's landscape and with urban sprawl, working with nature to grow blueberries can be fraught with challenges. Today, we talk with Mark Bowering of Walsh's Blueberries about the joys of working with nature to produce wild blueberries. He and his partners are helping to build a food sector that clearly fits our environment and landscape and climate, a product and pastime that is deeply embedded within this province's culture. You see, waiting beneath the boreal forest lays a huge potential for blueberry growth, as long as we can grasp the unique strategy that nature has designed to burn our way to food production.
When we say they're wild, we don't irrigate, we don't fertilize, we don't use pesticides, we don't use herbicides, we don't protect them from the weather. They're left on their own. They're able to transport water and nutrients through the root system from, say, a wet part 100 feet over to other plants that are drier. 2 to 3 weeks after we burn the fields, they're green. It's just amazing. It's like a whole rejuvenation. You're not killing anything. If anything, you're just making it much stronger. We would be accepting berries from people who would want to harvest them in the wild, and they would bring them, we'd pay them on the spot, almost like a fish plant, except for berries.
In early February, Mark Bowering and I had planned to get together to chat about blueberry farming, maybe even walk a few of his fields. But making this show is often as reliant on weather as food production itself is. There was an ice storm the morning we'd planned to meet up. So we pivoted, and I fired up the steam generator to get the Zoom machinery grinding into action. And a good story is a good story, whether it's told in a blueberry field or over a soulless computer screen. Fire up your own machinery and join us.
Start off, I say my background is horticultural, even since I've been young. You know, since I was 5 years old, I always had a garden. My grandfather gave me a little plot of ground and his vegetable garden. I started growing all kinds of different things. So I've had an interest in plants since I've been quite young. But with the blueberry farm, a friend of mine, a business partner, came to me and said, you know, there's a blueberry farm for sale. And it's kind of gone fallow now for about 7 or 8 years. And it's close to St. John's. You know, I would love to get into it because there's a few of us, a few partners. And would you be interested in looking at it? And I went out there. My first impression was, where are the blueberry plants? I don't see any plants. But I quickly realized that the ground was covered in blueberry plants. Wild blueberry plants or cultured blueberry plants are quite different. Newfoundland's wild blueberry, low bush blueberry, is naturally occurring. We don't plant any of these plants. They're all there right from the beginning. They're all natural. The only thing that we do is maintain the land with burning and removing trees and rocks and that sort of thing. But all the native plants are all still there, including ferns, blueberries, lily, and the list goes on, all kinds of different kinds. But back to how it started. We got there and then we ended up buying the farm from the Walshes. We kept the name as it was and then started cleaning up and getting it back into shape over the last 5 years. So it's a big area. The farm itself is over 400 acres, but the area of land that we are actively farming now is about 120 acres.
And that's all blueberry plus all kinds of other stuff as well.
Yeah, that's right.
So you have a background as well in landscaping or horticulture?
Yes, I should mention that as well. So for the past 20 years here in St. John's, I've had my own company called Bowering Gardens. It started actually as Bowering Ponds and Gardens. Shorten the name a bit to Bowering Gardens for just the ease of use. We've been operating now for 20 years in landscaping in around St. John's area, doing patios and stonework and walls, and then as well, maintenance of plant material and gardens and all that stuff.
Did you take ponds out of the name because you were tired of doing those?
Sometimes they are challenging. Yeah, it's easier to do a brick patio. I love them though.
Obviously, there would be skills that you learn in landscaping that you can use in blueberry farming.
Absolutely. And that's what we're finding. It's been fantastic because skill sets that my staff have and equipment that I have just lend itself completely to maintaining the blueberry farm. We use a bobcat excavator, and then the guys have general knowledge of cutting down plant material and moving rock and operating heavy equipment and all that. So it just went hand in hand completely.
So you don't plant any cultured blueberries?
Yeah. The blueberries that you see in Costco or whatever, they're called high bush blueberries. And most of those grow on a plant that's over 6 feet tall. So they're quite tall, and they grow a lot on the west coast of Canada and the US and all the way down into South America. So most of the berries that you're seeing right now are from Peru or that area at this time of year. So the low bush blueberry only grows maybe up to a foot high, maybe a foot and a half, depending, but usually around 6 to 8 inches here. And it's an organism in that they're all connected really by their root structure. It's an underground rhizome, which is kind of like a root, but they're all one organism and just like a giant mat over the ground, and they're all connected. It's pretty interesting for me anyways.
So when you're working among that, you have to be careful not to disturb that rhizome.
Yeah, well, they can take a lot of beating actually, but one thing you can't do is remove that top layer of soil, which is sometimes only 4 to 5 inches deep. That's above the glacial till that's underneath. There's no nutrients in the ground that's below. Everything is in that, what I call the live layer. So if you remove that, it can take years and years, I mean, a long time for it to be reestablished, because a peaty layer has to reform on top of that dead soil underneath for it to grow again. So when you see places that go in and remove everything, it's just that dead soil. And people try to plant other plants back in that soil after and wonder, you know, they don't grow too good. You got to bring topsoil back in.
Did you grow up picking blueberries in the wild?
Oh, yeah. It was always a family thing. Every year I had to go pick blueberries, middle of August usually. But it seems like now the season is kind of going a bit further into September.
Is that because the frost is later than it used to be?
I don't know. Some people are saying it could be just climate change or whatever, but it's something. I don't know, but it seems like it's extended a bit.
With the partridge berry, people always talk about you have to wait till the first frost so the bugs are out or whatever. Is there something similar with the blueberry?
Blueberries aren't the same. Partridge berry does have a grub that is in the berry itself, and it drops out as soon as you get the frost. But right now, Newfoundland is the only place in Canada that I know of that is blueberry maggot free.
Oh, there's a blueberry maggot?
There is, and it's only on the mainland, and we don't have it. We don't want it.
How would it get here?
There's a fly that lays the egg on the berry, but I don't know, a couple years ago, there was an incident where Costco brought in blueberry plants from Quebec, and they weren't screened, and they were all recalled because of the possibility of this maggot coming down, or the fly that lays the egg that grows the maggot coming here.
If you try to expand...
This is the kind of the interesting part. All boreal forest in Canada usually has the blueberry rhizome lying dormant in the ground all the time, no matter what. So if an area gets burned down, and that's why when areas get burned down, blueberries are the first things to grow back. So if we can go in and essentially cut down an area of trees and then stump that area, de-rock it, but making sure that we leave that top layer of soil there, blueberries will just naturally come back. It's just amazing. So when you think about how you could change all kinds of area into blueberry grounds, especially in Newfoundland, I mean, it could go on and on and on. You could have blueberry fields forever.
Like the famous song.
Yeah.
How long does that take? Like if an area burns down?
Usually 2 years to start growing directly after the fire, depending on the time of year. So say the fire happened early spring. So then they would start growing that spring. They grow up to about 6 or 8 inches. They grow in their first year, form the bud. They don't bloom that year. Then the next year, the second year, they'll flower in the spring, form the berry, and then you can pick them that fall. The highest yield will be the second year after a burn. So that's what we do. We burn the fields on purpose, and we don't get any berries from them that year. It's the following year that we get the big yield, and the yield is amazing. It's like carpet. It makes such a difference. It's unbelievable. Because see, what happens is you get what's called a first year cane, but there will be an extraordinary amount of buds on those canes on that year because it's brand new. So every year after that, the canes will age and there'll be fewer flower buds formed every year as the canes age. So if we burn, say, in year one, we'll harvest year two, year three, and sometimes year four before we'll burn again, depending how fast we can get around again, because it's quite a big deal for burning. As you can imagine, when we're lighting acres on fire at a time, it has to be done in accordance to our permits from the province, from the forestry and everyone else. We've actually added fire ditching around most of our fields now, so we can just light it and let her go.
Does that make the neighbors nervous?
Oh, yeah. We get lots of action happening. There's a couple of provincial planes fly over and RCMP and big long lines on the highway watching it. But we end up putting up signs, field burning in progress. Please do not report to 911.
Right. Do you have a piece of music I can use in the background here?
For blueberries?
Well, anything. A piece of music that you like. You know, what you listen to as you're making sure that the fire break hold.
I'll think about it, Cynthia.
To worry about nothing, 'cause we got the fire and we burning one hell of a something.
Ellie Goulding with her song Burn, as requested by my guest today, Mark Bowring. He certainly came through with a song that was relevant to part of our topic today, the controlled burning of areas to prompt blueberry production. I start this section by musing about how some people swear by certain patches that they pick every year, even though a natural cycle would mean that blueberry production areas rise and fall. Are such people lying?
You can still get a fairly good yield on an older blueberry plant, but then it goes from season to season, depending on what the weather or if they had good pollination or whatever. It's just that you have a much greater chance of having a good crop with the burn. Burning is a natural cycle. Now, we'll see this as well. Where blueberries are the first to come back, they'll also fade away as the forest grows back in. Some areas of forest is never going to grow back in because of barrens, but there are areas that they will grow back in. So what was your favorite berry spot 15 years ago may not even exist anymore. But now some areas will always be a berry spot regardless because the trees are never going to grow back because it's just too barren.
When you burn, do you have to do anything more to it? Or like in the second or third or fourth year?
I mean, we don't irrigate, we don't fertilize. When we say they're wild, some people will argue that they're not wild, but we don't water, we don't fertilize, we don't use pesticides, we don't use herbicides, we don't protect them from the weather. They're left on their own. The only thing we do is keep the trees from growing back in the margins. So we have to do some maintenance with cutting back the edges, making sure the trees stop encroaching, take out some large weeds if there are any, handpick, and just generally go around the farm, making sure that it's open. You don't want any shade on the berries. The one thing blueberries like is full sun. They'll exist in the forest, just like I was saying before, under the trees. They'll just have leaves. They'll never form flowers and they'll never form fruit.
Was 2022 a good year? Because there was a fair bit of hot weather and sun.
It was great. Crazy thing about blueberries is they love heat.
It's odd that they're in the boreal forest then.
We had really dry time this summer and really hot, and we had a great crop, which is encouraging because, you know, we were kind of worried about that. There's some introductory ideas that they're able to transport water and nutrients through the root system from, say, a wet part 100 feet over to other plants that are drier. This is not proven yet, and I don't pretend to be scientists on that area, but it's happening in other organisms too, like aspen groves do the same thing, can support each other. So that's good, and that may help against global warming.
In the early days when Walsh's or other companies started selling blueberries on a commercial basis, were they burning as well? Because we used to let places burn a little bit more.
Yes, it was easier years ago for a blueberry farm to exist. You know, people could go burn areas without too much worrying about it. It was acceptable. Now when there's a fire, everyone has to know about it. But what we're doing now with the fire breaks basically is ditching all the way around the field. So we have kilometers and kilometers of ditching to enable the safe burning. The province doesn't mandate that, but for our own ease of burning, we have done it because we can only burn in April, and we can only burn when it's 15 kilometers an hour or less of wind, and we can only burn when it's sunny and dry. So April, Newfoundland, 15 kilometers an hour, sunny and dry.
How many days would that be of April?
About two, if you're lucky, 2 to 5. And so if we can't burn quickly, you'll be there for months. 80 acres, you got to prepare at once. So these fire breaks have made our lives a lot easier. We can just light it, watch it, make sure it doesn't go over the fire break, and we're good. I mean, we have equipment there, trucks with water. We have basically a mini volunteer fire department on site, hoses and pumps and all that sort of thing, ready to go.
Is that a similar technique to Nova Scotia or other places where they're doing wild blueberries?
Nova Scotia has had some pretty cool equipment equipment I've seen over the years. They've had furnace oil incinerators. I don't think they use those anymore because I don't know about the oil. They are giant machines that kind of roll over the ground and incinerate the ground, called field burners. We're actually going to be looking into getting one of those for here now with propane. Reason being is sometimes with natural burn, you get an incomplete burn or what we call leopard spotting. So the fire will kind of go in and out of places and you'll end up with little blobs, maybe 5 or 10 feet wide that never got touched for some reason. So it can affect your yield. Ideally, the good burn from the machine is better.
So that sort of burning would be like some people who use small-scale burners for weeds.
Exactly. It's the same thing. You want a good hot burn on the ground to really stimulate the growth. Basically, you're pruning. It's a thermal prune.
Thermal pruning. So the rhizome underneath, the burn doesn't affect them.
Yeah, it just skims right over. That's amazing. You can go down an inch in the ground and there's nothing. It's just perfect. It's moist, cold, wet. The fire goes pretty fast over too, right? So it's not really staying in the same spots like a forest fire would. I know forest fires are fast moving in some cases too, but they also tend to burn for a nice while in one spot on the ground. Whereas a berry fire is really moving fast. It's in and out. It can pass over a spot within 5 minutes and it's gone.
Are you considered forestry or are you considered agriculture?
Agriculture, yeah.
You have to deal with forestry only in as much as you're trying to get agricultural.
Yes, exactly. So if we harvest any wood off the land, we have to report that to forestry. Yep. We could harvest wood if we wanted to sell it. We haven't gone down that road yet. And it would only be good for firewood. On most of the land that we have is fairly barren and small trees anyways.
And forestry would be involved when you do the burn.
Every morning we burn, I have to report to them every single morning. We have to get a permit and then you have to let them know in the morning when you're going to burn.
How do you harvest?
They're hand raked, believe it or not.
Just in one of those hand scoop rake things.
They're usually about 18 inches wide, like 12 inches deep with all these teeth. And then they scoop them up and then they pull them. And when you pull through, the berries come off and the sticks stay behind. Now you'll get some leaves and stuff, but mostly berries. Then they'll all go into a pan, what we call a berry pan. Very similar to almost to a fish pan.
It sounds like a lot of labor.
It is back-breaking work. There are a lot of locals who have been doing this for years and years and years. And some of them have been doing it for over 40 years.
They did it with Walsh's and then they hold on.
Yeah, because it's a money maker at that time of year. Yeah. Because we pay them a per pound price. That's for the berries with leaves and twigs and everything in it. We weigh them and then pay them on the spot.
How do you separate out the leaves then? You have a winnowing machine?
Yeah, they get shipped to St. John's from the field, which is about 50 minutes away. And then they get put into cool storage or immediately go through the winnowing machine. Just like you said, there's a machine that we actually have from Nova Scotia. It's an Acadian. That's the name of the company that produces it. It goes through a blower first, and then it goes through a series of filters that remove white berries, pink berries, leaves, sticks, all that sort of thing.
So can it tell it's a white berry? Like, how does it know it's a white rather than a blueberry?
On this machine, it uses a series of, how can I describe it? They're like cables. The berries run out over them. Plus, a white berry is naturally much smaller than a ripe one. All the small berries fall through. And then when it comes out of the end of that filter, it goes on to another sorter that removes these squat berries or unripe berries. And then finally, it goes on another conveyor belt where there are people, very similar to fish plant style, standing on the other side of the conveyor where they will remove anything that's left over. Like there's other berries that made it through, like white or leaves or squash berries. And then by the time it gets to the end of the conveyor belt, hopefully it's all ready to go.
Have you thought a little bit about going to mechanical harvesting?
There are a few mechanical harvesters that have been developed. The fields in Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, in those areas are a lot flatter and they don't have as much up and down, where our fields are a bit wilder. So dips and hollows are a problem for machine to stay level and pick. But there have been some advancements in technology now to almost have a machine that has a suspension that can float over the ground and do that. So I would expect that we would be switching to some of those coming very soon, but we're a small section of the wild blueberry industry here in Newfoundland comparatively to the mainland. So a machine being made for hair is slow going. We can light it up, up, so they can put it out, out, out. We can light it up, 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 so they can put it out, out, out. We can light it up. They gon' put it out, out, out. We can light it up, up, up. They gon' put it out, out, out. When your lights turn down, they don't know what they heard. Strike the match, play it loud, giving love to the world. Don't be raising our hands, shining up to the sky. 'Cause we got the fire, fire, fire. Yeah,
That was Burn by Ellie Goulding, the music choice of my guest today, blueberry grower and landscaper Mark Bowring. Let's head back to our chat.
Do you sell all of your blueberries in the province? Or
we do right now, yes. Our idea coming up would be to produce a powder that we would ship elsewhere. That's on our horizon closely, so we're working on that now. Right now, there's a big demand for all kinds of different fruit and vegetable powders, but the blueberry powder, if you get it down to that, we would use a system that does not destroy the vitamins and beneficial properties of them, because we'd use a system that doesn't heat the berry and destroy that. So it'll be a cool, dry system and then powderized. And then so it maintains all the integrity. One thing about the powder, it can go into like a gel cap. It's the essence of a blueberry. So they're putting blueberry powder in gel caps as a nutraceutical.
So you would get that equipment yourself. Can you ship blueberries out to somebody and have it done?
We do it here in Newfoundland only because I don't think it'd be feasible either for shipping because of the weight of the berries to make it worthwhile and to make a profit at it. We want to do all the secondary processing here in Newfoundland.
Yeah. Is there a market for dried blueberries?
Well, there could be some of that too. What would happen is the same system would work and we just would not pulverize the berries after it comes off the end. Yeah, for sure.
So for pollination, which would be important for the berries, do you have to add in beehives?
We don't need to. We can rely on our native pollinators. I started beehives with Adelaide. I've been working with him a bit and we have a couple of hives on our farms now. And I have some hives here at my own property in town. Mm-hmm. So we've been experimenting with that. We don't need them and we don't want to drive out any of the native pollinators. Some farms on the mainland, you know, they'll bring excessive amounts of hives in, hundreds and hundreds. But our idea here is just maybe a hive every 3 or 4 acres. That's all we want because we don't want to drive away into the native ones. But at the same time, honeybees will pollinate at a lower temperature. They'll come out of the hive at a lower temperature, which is really important for us because even a couple of degrees can make a difference here in June when we have our lovely 7-degree days with the fog coming in. And the native pollinators might not come out, but the honeybees will.
You'd think the native pollinators would be acclimatized.
They're smarter. They stay in. I guess in more concentrated agricultural areas where there's more monoculture, there's more requirement for honeybees where the natural pollinators probably don't exist as much. But we have so much natural area here. You know, there's natural pollinators here, a lot of them.
But when we talk about how to build food production in Newfoundland, Labrador, they talk about berries. Yeah. In your experience, what would be some things that we could do to help promote this industry?
Yeah. One would be help with burning. Yes, that's a big one. Well, I mean, a lot of people are very nervous about that and they don't want to get into it because they can't imagine having to have big areas of land on fire. And the regulators are very well, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, you can't do that. They have been more helpful in the recent years and they've had developed plans for us to help us with that. A couple programs they have in Maine and other places is that when the burn happens every spring, local fire departments will come and help as part of training. Maybe there needs to be something set up to aid the fire in the burnings. There's another method too, right? Some people don't burn, they just mow, but it's not nearly as effective. Your yield is lower as well. Burning really helps get rid of fungal blights, insects, and it also puts a lot of the plant material, turns it into ash, goes back into the soil immediately. 2 to 3 weeks after we burn the fields, they're green. It's just amazing. It's like a whole rejuvenation. So you're not killing anything. If anything, you're just making it much stronger.
With some other kinds of farming, it's the disposal of manure, which is the big issue.
Yeah.
And governments have helped in various ways with that.
Yeah.
So for blueberry farming, it would be the burning.
That's burning, road building, and fire breaks. If the government had a fire break program to create your fire break around your field.
There's a program that if you're clearing for agriculture, you get a certain amount of... Is there money for fire break for blueberry farms?
Not that I know of, but I think that would make sense certainly to help with that. If you're going in and just wanting to make a blueberry farm on land that's already treed over, that's a big project. By the time you cut it down, get your roads in, de-stump, de-rock, that's a lot. Entry that way is kind of hard for a new person. So what we did was buy a farm that already existed. It was still growing in a nice bit when we got to it, but it was way easier. For harvesting now is another one that's going to be coming up because there's not as many locals now who do the hand raking. Harvesting is an issue. So whether or not mechanical harvesters or farm workers.
Are there temporary foreign workers in the blueberry industry?
Not right now that I know of. For us, it's a bit difficult because it's not a long period of time. It's only 3 weeks.
Do you sell most of it as frozen product at this point?
Right now, that's all we're doing, yeah. Well, at harvest time, we do sell a limited amount of fresh and we freeze the rest. And then it all goes to the freezers and then it's either sold online and people can buy it online for locally, not for outside of Newfoundland. And we also sell it to a lot of commercial users like wineries and breweries.
How big is the market even provincially? How much of it do you fill just with your farm? Could you sell a lot more?
I know that we do 20 to 40,000 pounds in sales. I would imagine in the rest of the province, this is just totally off the top of my head, 200,000 pounds, maybe 250. I've heard talk before that the Newfoundland industry back in the 80s was up to like 1 million pounds. The big thing now is that the wild northern low bush berry has become much different from high bush blueberry. So the price to be paid for that has gone up. People are willing to pay more for that type of berry, and that is considered to be a better berry. Whereas years ago, whatever berry didn't matter, it was still a blueberry.
What would be the price difference?
Right now, we're getting between $6 to $8 a pound. And if it wasn't wild, I'm not sure what they're getting for high bush, but I would imagine maybe like $2 a pound, something like that. We often get people asking us a lot too. We sell partridge berries as well. The partridge berries they don't really lend themselves to commercial growing. Our idea is that with the blueberry plant, it won't just be blueberries. We would be accepting berries from people who would want to harvest them in the wild, and they would bring them. We'd pay them on the spot, almost like a fish plant, except for berries. We'd have our freezers there, everything. They come to the door. Here's 20 pounds of partridge berries. We pay them, and then we freeze them and then go on like that. It's kind of like a new idea for Newfoundland in berries. I don't know why we haven't been doing it before, but we should be.
Do you ever get into HACCP berries?
I'm familiar with HACCP. It's quite an interesting berry, really. I guess that if we went into that type of production, it would change the whole thing into really an intensive farming situation, because they'd all be grown in rows just like a regular farm, whereas this is really different.
What affects the taste of a blueberry?
Within the blueberries, there's 7 or 8 different sub-varieties. They're all intermingled, all grown within each other, and sometimes the berries are different color, from almost a black, which is really crazy, up to a bright powder blue, and different shapes. Some are more oval, some are more flat and round, and they do taste different in different areas. We have 2 major portions to our farm. They're about 6 to 8 kilometers apart. One is higher in elevation, another one is much lower in elevation, so that makes a difference. Find the berries might be more tart in one area, sweeter in another. If they're open, like if it's more barren and open to winter winds, they'll taste different in that area. Or if they're on a southwest facing slope, yeah, there are certainly differences between tartness and sugar. And
saltwater blueberries?
We're not that far from the ocean. We can see from the top of the farm. We're looking out.
When you're doing landscaping in the city, do you try to kind of push people toward putting some berries in their backyard?
Not often, honestly, because of the soil conditions. We don't have that peat layer that they like. In town, the gardens would be more suited for high bush blueberry because it's just regular topsoil.
What's one of your favorite foods?
I do like blueberries and I like partridge berries.
Well, thanks so much, Mark. It's great to chat with you about this. It's interesting to hear about the way in which you're doing wild blueberries.
Thank you. And thanks for the opportunity. We don't plant any of these plants. They're all there right from the beginning. They're all natural. The only thing that we do is maintain the land with burning and removing trees and rocks. They're all connected really by their root structure. It's an underground rhizome. They're all one organism and just like a giant mat, and they're all connected. It's pretty interesting. Newfoundland is the only place in Canada that I know of that is blueberry maggot free. We don't want to drive out any of the native pollinators. Some farms on the mainland, you know, they'll bring excessive amounts of hives in, hundreds and hundreds.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland and Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of the show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. To send me a message, email me at iemke@grenville.mun.ca. For music on today's show, we heard Ellie Goulding's song, Burn. The theme music, Cluckold Hen, was performed this week by the Foghorn String Band. This show was made possible by a grant from the Community Radio Fund of Canada and is produced by the Voice of Bombay Radio Network and Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
You could have blueberry fields forever.